D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, Willie Donick, and David Janes here with you. Corey Curtis just gave you a shout-out of sorts on X. Mm-hmm. Derek, he said, Derek Mason holds the Titans record for all-purpose yards in the season with 2,690. Chim Dike is on pace for 2,720. Needs to be said, that's a 17-game schedule. Mason did it in 16. Still, he's having a great year.
He is having a terrific year, and that's why, to me, because he's a jack-of-all-trades. He's still learning how to be a wide receiver, and he has a ways to go. But he's excelling at those other areas that they have, put in his care. And I'm talking about punt and kickoff return. So the young man is doing a wonderful job. And, you know, if he gets it, then great for him. That means you can only look forward to bigger and better things the next following year.
So before we shift gears to Vanderbilt and Tennessee, Derek, before the break, mm-hmm. you asked Willie a philosophical question about development in the NHL. Do you want to repeat that question?
Is it more so, what it boils down to, Willie, is it more so on the head coach once they get to that level to develop the player? Or is a lot of the development done beforehand? Because they have so much other stuff they got to worry about. Trying to develop one guy amongst all these other guys, it's going to be tough.
It's a great question. And we've discussed the weakness of NFL development, mm-hmm. especially at the quarterback position, because you don't have the minor league system to where you could put a guy in a position. Like when you put, let's just say if Fedor Svechkov was playing at Milwaukee right now, mm-hmm. you know, they could put him out there, and it's not the end-all be-all that Milwaukee wins every night. They're trying to win, mm-hmm. but the development takes precedence. And so the development, to answer your question, I think the majority of it is done at the minor league level, ideally. And that's where sometimes I think if you rush guys to the NHL and you're trying to develop them and playing against the best people in the world, you get the experience, but can you develop? Because you're right. Now, if you declare, if you sort of just understand, hey, look, this is a rebuild. Winning every night, we know, is probably not going to happen. It's a last resort. You didn't want to do this, but this is where they are. Then maybe you can do a little developing while you play at the NHL level. And that's what's tricky. I think they're going through, and it's not by choice, but it's just going in that direction where they may shift a little bit more in that direction, and more so than we're trying to win every night and be as competitive as we can for the veteran players. But the veteran players have had their chance to this point, a quarter of the season in, and the results are what they are. They're at the bottom. So they're running out of time. It doesn't have to happen today, but it's clearly moving in that direction.
Let's focus on the gigantic matchup at Neyland Stadium this weekend. Vanderbilt at Tennessee. By the way, the line has moved since I wrote down what it was previously. When I wrote it down, it was Tennessee -2.5 on ESPN bet. Now it's Tennessee -3.5 on ESPN bet. So take that for what it's worth. But let's start here. Let's remind everybody what Diego Pavia said during the offseason on Bussin' with the Boys about Vanderbilt and its place in the college football playoff landscape, or the college football landscape, I should say, in the state of Tennessee.
Vanderbilt's going to run Tennessee after this year. Like, this is going to be the new staple of, like, college football. What's going to happen here at Vanderbilt.
Do any of you and the boys ever, like, talk about that? Like, we got to be the state school.
Well,
we're in Nashville, Tennessee. We're in the Music City. Like, we need to be the brand of Tennessee.
Everyone wants to come to Tennessee because of Nashville. So they want to come to Nashville, so Vanderbilt. And then when we have, like, the most money in NIL, like, why not come here? So, like, we literally just have to win this year and throughout the rest of the year. It'll take care of itself.
You think Vandy will have the most money in the game?
I think we'll be up there.
Yeah.
But, like, it's Nashville.
Yeah, there's a lot of big hitters around here.
Yeah.
They just need a team to believe in.
Yeah, that's all they need.
They need Diego Pavia.
They need Diego Pavia. And you know what? Diego Pavia, so far, has delivered. That interview was recorded before the football season. And when he said that and Bussin' with the Boys released the podcast, people thought Diego Pavia was nuts. When Diego Pavia said what he said on Paul Feinbaum about our goal is to compete for a national championship, to win the national championship, people thought he was nuts. But here's what I love most about this game. And we'll get into the nuts and bolts of it with Trevor Maddich in the next segment because he'll know a lot more about this than I do. But here's the thing I love about this game in particular. Mm-hmm. Strip away the names for a moment. Strip away Vanderbilt, strip away Tennessee. Team X versus Team Y. And it's still a big game. Team X at 9-2 going on the road in a conference game with a chance to punch its ticket to the college football playoff. It's still a big game. Then you put the names back on. The magnitude of the rivalry. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And Will Leach of The Athletic wrote a column the other day with the headline. It wasn't about this game in particular. Mm-hmm. College football playoff bids are great. Making your rival miserable is still better. And I completely agree. And I imagine that's where Tennessee fans are right now. Y'all know how big of a Duke fan I am. Born in Durham, North Carolina, came out the womb at Duke University Hospital, and put into a Duke onesie almost immediately. I was born into it. And I despise the University of North Carolina. And it brings me just as much joy to watch Carolina struggle as it does to watch Duke win. Although Duke did beat Carolina in football over the weekend, and that was pretty great. But Duke could win the Tiddlywinks National Championship against North Carolina, and I would still love it more than anything in the world because I hate UNC. And I know that's how a lot of Tennessee fans probably feel about Vanderbilt. Tennessee fans hear Diego Pavia say what we just played. They've probably been stewing about it for the past couple of months, especially as Diego Pavia has backed up his talk, right? And those clips are starting to resurface now that the game is here. I love it. I know Coach Willie over there is freaking out. But as someone who does not have a dog in this fight, Willie, Derek, I'll start with Derek. This is what makes this matchup so fantastic. It's the magnitude of the game itself plus the rivalry aspect. I cannot wait to watch this game on Saturday.
Did you, I mean, and I know, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but when you're listening to Diego, you just hear the confidence. Like, he just said it again, like, and I know this was before the season started, but even then it was like, it's this confidence and this calmness in his voice. Like, we're going to run. And it's matter of fact about it. He's not laughing. It's not like, yeah. It's a matter of fact. He didn't stutter. He basically, he said it as if they've been running the town for years prior and the last 3 or 4 years have just been a hiccup. And now they're back to running the town again. That's how he sounded before the season. And it's come true, at least up until now, but they got to finish the job off against UT. But what he said is coming into fruition.
Willie, before you answer that, here's a perfect example of what we're talking about. One texter says, "Have a great day, fellas. I can't do the Pavia crap. Dude is such an incredibly annoying guy. I've never said this in my life, but go Vols."
Why are y'all annoyed by a guy that is, he's been a part of a turnaround?
The Vols fans are salty about this. That's what makes this game so great.
It's like, just be happy for him. Y'all could still want to win, but be happy for the young man. I guess they're mad that Vandy are not doormats anymore.
Maybe. How does Coach Willie feel about all of this?
Well, at least this season.
I'm going to give you just Willie the Nashvillian, the 30-year vet.
Okay.
In sports talk. I think it's a little bit of the intrigue is that Vanderbilt has pushed the envelope because most years, let's be totally honest, when you say, you know, the Will Leach line, what was the line again? You live to
college football playoff. College football playoff bids are great. Making your rival miserable is still better.
That is 100% true for Vanderbilt fans against Tennessee. It is not as nearly as much for Tennessee fans against Vanderbilt. They're having to sort of muster this up, right? They like to talk down to Vanderbilt fans to say, oh, you're not our rival. You know, we're your rival, but you're not really our rival. And, of course, we had fun with the fact that Vanderbilt had like 91% when you could choose which teams you want to play as your rivals. So it's there. quite honestly, this rivalry for long stretches has been one-sided. So that's what's intriguing about this is Vanderbilt's going in there with something really significant to play for and going in there with swagger. And so it may be unlike any Vanderbilt-Tennessee game we've seen. And then you add the characters like Pavia to the mix, and you've got something right out of a movie, right? It's it's much-watched TV. I would think there's a lot of people that are not Vanderbilt or Tennessee fans that are like, hey, I got to watch that. I got to see how that goes. But I'll do you one further on the brashness of Pavia. Clark Lee, 3 years before he ever had Diego Pavia, went to the podium when he first got the Vanderbilt job, and he said, I want to make this the best program in the country. And people almost laughed him right out of wherever that was, Birmingham or Atlanta, or maybe even Dallas. I don't know where it was. They rotated around now. But Diego Pavia is echoing the vision that Clark Lee has had since he's got there. He's believed that if you back them with the right resources, he can make that a very special program, and you can play with the big dogs that are in the SEC. So there's a long way to go in the process. They don't have the same financial resources that other teams in the league have. It's not even close yet. They're closing the gap. They have enough to compete with. They've got to be smart with it, and they've got to keep growing with their resources. So it's evolved a lot, but there's still a long way to go. But this has got all kinds of intrigue. From a sexiness game, it's 10 out of 10.
By the way, the last time Vanderbilt went to Neyland Stadium and won was 2017. The Commodores won 42-24. Kyle Shermer, 4 touchdown passes. Ralph Webb, 163 rush yards and 2 touchdowns. So it's been, I know they don't play there every year, but it's been a minute since Vanderbilt went to Neyland Stadium and won. We know what is at stake in this matchup. If Vanderbilt wins to go 10-2, they'll put themselves in a good position to qualify for the college football playoff. It sounds like they'll probably need some help, but if they're 10-2, they will absolutely be in the discussion for the college football playoff. And again, we'll get into the nuts and bolts with Trevor Maddich coming up in just a matter of minutes. But Derek, you have two of the highest scoring offenses in the country in this game. Tennessee averages 42.3 points per game. That's 4th in the country. Vanderbilt 38.9. That's 9th in the country. Vanderbilt better defensively, at least by scoring defense, 21.7 points allowed per game versus Tennessee's 27.3. But are you anticipating an offensive explosion in this game, which the statistics would suggest, or are you expecting a different type of game on Saturday?
Every defense that Vanderbilt has played against, they've managed to, you know, do more than what was thought of them to be able to do. Obviously, they're averaging, what is it, close to 40 points per game, if not more than 40. So
Tennessee is averaging 42.3 points per game.
Vandy is 38.9. Okay. I think this is going to be a shootout. I really do. I see it as, because I don't think Tennessee has the defense that, say, a Texas had. And Texas was able to put up some points, but Aunt Vandy ended up coming back and making it a close game. I don't think they have a Texas defense, but I think Tennessee's offense is more consistent, and I think they are more lethal than Texas's offense, at least this season they've shown. So I do expect them to score, and I do expect Vandy to score. It's going to come down, and Clark Lee said it. Basically, it's going to come down to the defense, and he expects his defense to continue to, you know, go out there and to do the things that they need to win ball games. They are a bend but not break defense. As they get closer to the red zone, they're starting to tighten up. They've been opportunistic. So, to me, it's not going to be the points. It's going to be who's going to make that one or two plays defensively, because when you have high-scoring offenses like this, the bad part about it is there's not many defenses in the country that can stop it. There's not many. And even Georgia's defense, they're damn good. Ohio State's defense, they're damn good. But eventually, somebody's going to put up some points against them, too. When you have league like this, there's two or three possessions in a game that the defense must come up with a stop. And whoever does that, Vandy or Tennessee, that's who's going to win the game, because I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. It's just who gets that one or two plays at that one or two critical times on defense.
Willie, go ahead.
I think you're dead right, D-Mace. I think it's you have to sort of redefine what good defense is when you play a team like Tennessee, because you're going to give them some points. So it's key stops at key times, field goals instead of touchdowns, couple of turnovers. But the one thing I'm really intrigued with Vanderbilt's defense, we know they are more bend but don't break. We've seen them be vulnerable, throwing the ball out on the perimeter with a lot of those three-by-ones, those quick wide receiver tosses. Can they? Because Tennessee's really good at that, right? And they can hit you over the top. So can Vanderbilt do better than they did, say, against Texas and Auburn, who hurt them? Now, Kentucky didn't hurt them, but the Tennessee's got more weapons, right? So Vanderbilt's got to do well in that area. The other part is the tempo. Vanderbilt likes, even though they score all those points, they try to do it with making you drive 10 or 12 plays when you have the ball, and they will take time and go 10 yards at a time and milk the clock when they can when they have the ball. Do they try to play tempo against Tennessee? Or have they found these last couple weeks that, hey, just playing a regular tempo is fine? They're outgunning teams. I'm curious about that. Do they try to make it a lower possession game? Or do they just sort of play it straight and just say, you know what, Tennessee's going to play quick, and we just have to try to beat them toe-to-toe?
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on Vanderbilt and Tennessee. Huge game this weekend at Neyland Stadium. 615-737-1025. Trevor Maddich will join us coming up next. We'll get his breakdown of this matchup and what we can expect from yet another college football playoff rankings reveal. We'll talk to Trevor coming up next. 615-737-1025. The MTSU Blue Raiders will take on New Mexico State, speaking of Diego Pavia, this Saturday at 2 p.m. Catch all of the action on Totally Hits 93.3, with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5. The game, we are presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate now at BAXHomeworks.com. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, and welcome in our friend, newly minted BYU Hall of Famer, Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters. Trevor, of course, we are discussing the upcoming matchup between Vanderbilt and Tennessee. Here's my question to you. In which area can Vanderbilt exploit Tennessee, and in which area can Tennessee exploit Vanderbilt?
Well, actually, from a standpoint of most, I don't want to say soft, but where you could exploit on both sides is the passing defense. Only Arkansas gives up fewer. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me say that again. Only Arkansas gives up more passing yards per game than Tennessee and Vandy. They're right down there at the bottom of the SEC. Now, part of that is because their offenses are good and teams throw the ball a lot. When you look at yards per passing attempt, they're still, though, about mid-tier, mid to lower tier. And so I think both sides are going to try to throw the ball. And I think both sides are going to expect that the quarterback of the other team is going to throw the ball, and they'll figure they'll have to keep up and attract me. Now, there are things I think that Vandy can do to kind of mitigate that a little bit, but ultimately I would be stunned if there aren't a ton of footballs in the air in this game.
Trevor, if Vanderbilt wins this game at Neyland Stadium, the Commodores will be 10-2, and a lot of us think that should be good enough to warrant inclusion in the college football playoff. But it seems the general consensus is that even if Vanderbilt wins, the Commodores are going to need help. How much help do you think they would need if the Commodores win this game and are at 10-2 at the end of the regular season?
Well, I think a ton of help, Willie. I think it's a real problem for – I'm sorry, was this Adam?
Yes, that's okay.
Yeah, sorry, Adam. I thought it was Willie for a second there. You're channeling Willie's voice. You should do some impersonation work. That was really good. But I think that they'll need a ton of help. And the reason is that, you know, Vandy is sitting there right now in the AP at number 12. We'll see what the committee ranks them. But either way, they're outside of that top 12. And The problem that they have is that getting into the top 12 is not enough. They'll have to be in the top 10 to be really safe. And the reason is that they're going to be jumped. 11 and 12 in the final ranking are going to be jumped by the Group of Five champion and the ACC champion. And so unless it's by some miracle Miami, which, you know, still is Miami's outside the top 12 now. And so to be safe as an at-large team, you've got to be in the top 10. And when you look at who's in the top 10 right now, Alabama's there, but Alabama beat Vandy head-to-head. Notre Dame's there. They're number 9, and I think the committee loves Notre Dame. They've already decided that Notre Dame with 2 losses is better than Vandy with 2 losses. So the committee's already made that decision. And then Oklahoma, they have LSU, but if they lose to LSU, they're at number 8. The question is, would they fall all the way behind Vandy? And it's very possible, but then Vandy would move up one spot. So you'd have to have multiple teams up there lose that are in the top 10. And if you look at 10-9-8, you've got Alabama, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, and then Texas Tech after that. And so in Oregon's up there, it just seems like there would be a requirement of not only Vandy winning at Tennessee and looking really good doing it, looking like a playoff team doing it, which they could do, but also they would need multiple teams ahead of them to lose because of the fact that the ACC champ and the Group of Five champ are likely to be behind them in the final ranking.
So, Trevor, so what you're saying is this upcoming week is really the week where Vandy's going to gain some leverage. It's going to be it has to be this week with them winning and potentially other teams losing, because it seems like even championship weekend can't help Vandy if teams don't lose this weekend.
Right, because, you know, the committee, I think, has heard coaches talking about the unfairness of a team making a conference championship game and losing and being downgraded and dropped behind a team that didn't make their conference championship game and therefore wasn't at risk of losing. And I think you look at the ACC last year, SMU got beat by Clemson in the ACC championship game, and SMU had a roaring comeback in the fourth quarter, but they fell short. But the committee didn't downgrade them out of the playoff. And so SMU, having lost the ACC championship game, was in it anyway. And so the conference championship games, I don't know that the losers there are going to drop far enough to help Vandy. You know, what helps Vandy, though, now is that their losses are to Alabama and Texas, both of them on the road. Those are shaping up to be pretty good losses. And I think that the committee will take that into account. And then at Tennessee, if they're able to win there, that's a tough place to play, a tough place to win. And I think the committee would give them a lot of credit for winning at Tennessee if they're able to pull it off. But like you said, Derek, it also will require not just one, maybe two or more, maybe three teams ahead of them losing in the final week of the regular season. That means this weekend.
Now, you know, we talk about Vandy as a team and them, you know, still, even if they win, them not securing a place in a college football playoff, which, you know, is unthinkable when you come out the SEC and you're 10-2 and that's still not a lock to make the college football playoffs. But when you talk about individuals, Diego Pavia winning, potentially not just winning, but I'm saying first and foremost being in New York, does he have to have one of those Heisman Trophy moments? Do you still think if they don't win this game, do you believe he should be in New York, or do you think he will be in New York?
I believe he absolutely should be in New York. I don't know that he's in position to win the Heisman unless he has a magnificent Heisman moment this weekend against the Volunteers. But I think he deserves to be in New York. I mean, the criteria for the Heisman Trophy is the most outstanding player in college football. And we tend to look at the stat monsters to justify that. But the truth of it is, Diego Pavia his stats have been great. But it's when he does things that are most outstanding. I mean, their superpower the last 2 years has been extending drives and keeping the opposing offense on the sideline. And that, to large measure, is Pavia finding the weakness in the defense and hitting it on schedule, or rolling around and running around and finding a weakness and then hitting that, or doing some miraculous thing that allowed him to extend a drive that kept the opponents on the sideline and possibly even ended in a score in those critical moments, in those critical moments that matter most. And so I hope that the 900, I think there's like 900 and some Heisman voters, I hope they're paying attention to not just what Pavia does, but when he does it. And really, in this game, he'll have another opportunity to do the same thing and exhibit that superpower, because this Tennessee offense, when it gets rolling against a vulnerable secondary, they're really hard to keep up with unless you don't let them onto the field. And that's really the key to the game for Vanderbilt overall. It's Pavia extending drives with plays that won't make the highlight reel necessarily, but that'll frustrate the Tennessee defense and keep the ball in Vanderbilt's hands.
Trevor Maddux is with us. Trevor, you read my mind. This is Willie, by the way. So I'm saving the best for last. I'm the anchor today. But I think I'm hearing you say that something I brought up right before you came on. If you're Clark Lee, do you go into the game trying to make it low possession? Because that is what they have done effectively before. And as you mentioned, it can frustrate Tennessee if it's done right. And I would think it would be a no-brainer a few weeks ago, but they've shown that they can play some up-tempo if needed, and they've been really effective. But would you go in thinking, let's try to keep the possessions down to a minimum?
Yeah, I would think that, and especially because Clark Lee's a defensive guy. You know, defensive guys always think, okay, complementary football. And the first rule of complementary football is the offense stays on the field for a while so that the defense can rest. And then the offense strings together several first downs. So when you do punt, you put the other team deep. That's complementary football in the eyes of pretty much every defensive coach that's ever existed. And so I can see them trying to do that. I think there's another reason why, Willie, that they would really want to do that. And that's because the last thing you want to do when you're in your meetings as a staff is to think, okay, we're about to play Tennessee, and I can't wait to get into a track meet with them. I can't wait to get into a big play contest with Tennessee's offense. Man, that's going to be super fun. That's not what they're thinking. They're thinking on defense, how do we win situations? In other words, how do we, during the course of a drive, limit big plays so they have to run a lot of plays, then win on first or second down, or when there's a penalty and it's third and long, now we get them off the field. You're thinking about those kinds of situations. And so I think Vanderbilt, you know, again, you talk about Pavia's superpower. They lead the SEC in third down conversion percentage at about 52%. And so, you know, I think they would lean into that rather than say, okay, our quarterback's good, their quarterback's good, let's see who can put up the most points.
You hit on Pavia's superpower a couple times. I think that's a really interesting question when it comes to the Heisman vote itself, because I'm wondering, you mentioned there's voters all across the country, and I do wonder how many can see that nuance, because you're right, his stats are startling, and just you put him side by side with anybody, they're really good. But when you add that extra note that the superpower, as you call it, is that you're trying to keep possessions away from the other team, I'm not sure the average voter will know that. That's what would concern me.
Yeah, and they won't, and that's what I worry about. I think most Heisman voters take it very seriously, but sometimes I fear that some voters were awarded the Heisman vote in a divorce by a judge. It's like, I wonder what some people might be thinking. These are especially the people that send in their ballots before the final games are played. And they have to send in the ballot once they've seen all the games played. I mean, that happens for some of them. And I wish really if that happened, that unless they were traveling outside the country and stuff like that, that they would have that taken away from them. But that's a different thing. I have ideas on how they could change the Heisman voting procedure that I think would make it more credible. But at the same time, people don't look at that third down percentage. It's just not a stat you look at. They do look at completion percentage, and Pavia is about 72%. Most of the time, when you complete that many passes, it's because you're throwing the ball at or near the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage much of the time. But Pavia's averaging about 9.5 yards per pass attempt, and that means he's going downfield plenty. You know, and I think when you look at kind of that balance as well, if you're a voter, there are reasons you can say that Diego Pavia, even though he may not have the most yards and the most, although he's up there, I mean, he's pushing 3,000 yards right now. He's just under. But, you know, if you're looking at the things that people do in the critical moments, Diego Pavia, one of the reasons the completion, third down percentage is so high is because Pavia doesn't have a whole lot of incomplete passes. When he throws it, it's 72%. One of his guys is catching it somewhere and usually catching it for a nice gain. And so these are things that I think voters need to pay attention to. Diego Pavia he's not just the MVP of the team. I think for the last 2 years, you can make a case that would be hard to break that Diego Pavia is the MVP in all of college football. That no player was more valuable to his team than Diego Pavia was to Vanderbilt the last 2 years. And the way he's elevated the franchise, not just on the field in terms of winning games, although that's important, it's hard to do, but the way he's elevated Vanderbilt football into the culture of Nashville, I think has been enormous for that university. And because Nashville is full of stars, full of celebrities, full of big money businesses. And guess who celebrities and stars and big money business wants to be around? They want to be around stars too. And all that stuff was going on when Vanderbilt was just sort of off to the side and nobody paid much attention to him. Well, now people are paying attention to him and they've elevated into that culture. And Pavia said in the summertime how important it was to just keep winning, to continue to be a part of that Nashville culture, and he has done it. And so I think all that adds into what's outstanding about a college football player, and I think Pavia deserves to be in New York.
Trevor Matich has been our guest on D-Mace Vingan and Donnie. He joins us every Tuesday, and he is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. We will take your reaction to what Trevor had to say. We also have some reaction on the upcoming matchup between Tennessee and Vanderbilt this weekend. 615-737-1025. This Thursday, the NFL Game of the Week, Chiefs and Cowboys at 3:30 on 1025. The game, the NFL Game of the Week, is presented by Circus Sportsbook Kentucky and Massaro and 12 South.
Josh, Diego Pavia was pretty effective last year, but he seems to have hit another level this year. What have you seen in his growth or his development over the past year?
Yeah, just another year of development, command of what they're doing offensively. Certainly has the ability to use his feet and make plays. He's thrown it extremely well. He's continued to get better throughout the course of the season and being efficient with the football and has created a bunch of big plays. But his ability to be a part of the run game as well is a huge part of what they do offensively.
That was Tennessee coach Josh Heupel discussing Diego Pavia ahead of the Vols matchup against Vanderbilt at Neyland Stadium this weekend. Speaking of that game, you can root on Vanderbilt football this Saturday with 102.5 The Game at Germantown Pub, located at 708 Monroe Street in Nashville, starting at 2 o'clock. Win great prizes and cheer for Vanderbilt as they take on the Volunteers this Saturday at Germantown Pub. We'll get to some of your reaction. Another thing I noted, and Willie touched on this earlier, in terms of the tempo, the amount of plays these two teams like to run. Tennessee averages 73 offensive plays per game. Vanderbilt averages roughly 62. So a difference of roughly 11 per game. So a bit of a clash of styles in that aspect. But as Trevor said, both Joey Aguilar and Diego Pavia can throw the ball. Although if you ask Diego Pavia, as he said at the end of the game last week, a lot of people didn't think he could pass. But he can air it out, as you saw last weekend against Kentucky, when he was hitting Trey Richardson for a couple of huge touchdowns. But let's get to your reaction, 615-737-1025. Here's an interesting one. One texter says, I'm anti-Pavia. Nothing to do with him at Vanderbilt. Nothing to do with him being at Vanderbilt. Rather, it has more to do with my dislike of the transfer portal and constantly changing eligibility rules. I know Pavia didn't start the movement, in quotes, but his name has always been at the top with the challenging of the JUCO transfer and extra seasons of eligibility. College football should not have a free agent system and should still be under the 5 years to play, 4 year system. Transfer down divisions and be immediately eligible, transfer up or lateral and have to sit a year and that's it. Not this play at six schools and 6 or 7 years junk. Just my two cents. Love the show.
I mean, listen, nobody wants it to be the way it is. But, you know, it's not the player's fault. I don't know why. I mean, you can't hate Pavia. It's the NCAA. They chose not to put in rules before they started letting all this stuff happen. Or rules that were both beneficial to the player and the university. It was like they went from one end of the spectrum to basically the other end. It went from no, you can't transfer, to yeah, you can transfer as many times as you want to. But now they've sort of reined it in, at least when you can transfer. But this is just the way of college sports nowadays, unless and until the SEC and the Big Ten and the ACC choose to, you know, do their own thing. This is the way it's going to continue to be. They may change some things here and there, but for the most part, the horse is out of the barn, and you ain't getting that thing back in unless you break it down to a power three or four and y'all just do your own thing. So, but, you know, I think a lot of that is sort of going by the wayside because a lot of this has to do with the COVID and, you know, everything else. So a lot of that is starting to come to an end. And hopefully you won't see guys that are 24, 25 years old still in college playing. And granted, it's a rule they're able to do. They found a loophole in it. So take advantage of it. But eventually, you know, it's going to sort of regress back to what it had been prior to COVID.
At the same time, Willie, Dustin in Hopkinsville says, I kind of like it the way it is. It's leveled the playing field.
That it has.
It's been entertaining. It's, you know, I'm a great example. I might have sent that first text verbatim a couple years ago. I might have. But I can't be two-faced about it. I certainly enjoy that Vanderbilt has jumped on board and been effective evolving. They were late doing it, but they've gotten, look at the sports. Their women's soccer team is now in the final eight. Both men's and women's basketball ranked right now. Baseball perennially ranked. So they've evolved, and the athletic program is arguably as strong as it's ever been at one point from start to finish. We're not even getting into a lot of the other secondary sports that are always good, golf and tennis, etc. So it's working for Vanderbilt. I can't argue. I'm evolving with the times. I don't think I would have ever chose it, though, because I don't think you can put a price of a great college experience at one or two schools rather than two to four schools. And I would be in favor of age limits. I would.
Mm-hmm. Willie, do I need to tap the sign again? I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to make money. That's the NCAA way of life. Don't make me tap the sign.
But even Kirby Smart, who's probably got one of the higher payrolls going, he's got the highest stakes. He's expected to compete for the title every year. His point of if you're out there for a check, you're not going to be successful. Not in college, but you certainly aren't going to be successful out of college if you're about the check. Life is not about the check, it especially at that age. It's about developing you as a person as well as a player. So there has to be a balance in there somewhere. And I like Kirby Smart saying that, that at least he's seeing signs that, yeah, you can make a lot of money, but you better be tough and you better still have that blue collar, that will to get better, compete, all of those things that are going to help you hopefully after your playing career is over.
Hair Metal Henry says, something tells me it's going to be close for most of the game, and then a really bad targeting call is going to change the momentum one way or the other.
Yeah, it could be.
Willie, let me ask you this question. As our resident Commodore, you are a proud alum of Vanderbilt University. And I know that Coach Willie likes to keep things in perspective. He's a one game at a time kind of guy, as we told Clark Lee yesterday. But is it hyperbole to say that this is the biggest game in Vanderbilt football history?
I think with the build up to it, it's I don't know. The game day, we had that discussion. I think you maybe asked a similar version of that question leading up to Missouri with game day there and the ability to sort of grab the spotlight and win when everybody is got you under the glare.
Yes.
This is right up there, I would say. But as Trevor pointed out, they need some forces to be working in their favor in addition to them winning the game for it to be next level. But I think you do have to try to at least prepare yourself. If it doesn't work out around the country and this is the cherry on top of a 10-2, it's still going to be really meaningful, I would say. But biggest in history, I don't know. Like in hindsight, you know, beating number one, the goalposts against Alabama, it's hard to top that. But I think you've got an argument in the buildup to this particular Vanderbilt-Tennessee game.
Heather Dinich on ESPN.com has her CFP bubble watch. I love bubble watch. She has Vanderbilt as her first team out in the SEC. She writes this quote, "The Commodores could stay status quo this week, which means at number 14, they remain a long shot for an at-large bid. Punctuating their resume with a win against a ranked Tennessee is the first step, but they would also need multiple upsets ahead of them to get serious consideration. It's not inconceivable, as Miami can lose at Pitt, Oklahoma can suffer a third loss to LSU, Alabama can lose the Iron Bowl. None of it matters, though, without a win in Knoxville." That was Heather Dinich on Bubble Watch on ESPN.com. One texter says, "I agree with the first text. It certainly has gotten out of hand. All we wanted was the video game back, and instead we got players that transfer schools every week. Unfortunately, gone are the days of people staying and actually fighting for a spot. As an Alabama fan, I am very grateful that Ty Simpson stayed and waited his turn and developed."
D-May said it. Mm-hmm. It's not going back. You know,
no,
I,
it's not.
I agree. Deep down in my heart, I don't like a lot about it. It's not. I don't think it's going to be great for the kids in a lot of cases. But I am coming around to, it's just the norm now. There is a huge sacrifice that I don't think the average 20-year-old who might be transferring in a given year realizes what you're giving up. It's so easy to say, well, I'm going over here and I'm getting X thousand dollars more, so I'm doing it. And I haven't played as much over at school A, so I'm going to school B, and I'm going to make more money. That's a short-term thing. The fighting for the job thing has a value, I agree, that the texter pointed out. And the value of being in an environment where you grow with a group of people around you that probably become your closest, tightest friends going forward, there is a price to be paid there. But we're not going back. We gotta face the facts. And it is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean,
Vanderbilt's planning to go 10-2. That wasn't happening in the old system.
No, it wasn't. And I think some people are not. Hell, Coach Saban wasn't used to it. And I don't know if he's still used to it. But
think about how many prominent coaches.
I think Saban's good at throwing tweaks out there. That
exactly.
I think are really, really some stuff that won't change everything back to the way it was, but maybe make the current system better. And I hope that they continue to listen to him and try to figure out how to, little by little, evolve it so that you it's not quite as crazy.
But it's not even however they choose to change it, I think it's going to have to be in a way where both – there has to be a benefit for both parties in this. But I think what Saban and coaches like Saban has to understand – this is not the old West anymore. This is not the way they used to do things and the way y'all had the market cornered. Y'all had a monopoly on everything. That's not anymore. You can't. They didn't broke up your little monopoly game. They did it. Now everybody can participate. And teams like Vanderbilt that hadn't been able to get, you know, individuals into their university, whether it be because, you know, academics or they just didn't want to go to Vanderbilt, they didn't see any benefit in a sense. Now, there is a huge benefit because Vandy can pay just as much as anybody else can pay, and it's all legal.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on Vanderbilt and Tennessee coming up this weekend. But coming up next, Predators GM Barry Trotz will join us for his weekly chat on DVD. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.